Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here with you as we wrap up the offseason program before we get into training camp over a month away. So it's going to be a little bit quieter here, but we did get to finish up OTAs on Thursday. The last viewing period, though, was on Monday. So a few days here and there where we didn't get to see how the Broncos finished up. But I was down in the cafeteria this morning, and some of them were walking out. They finished up pretty early so they could get off to their vacations or whatever they want to do. Ben Garland said he's just going to be here all the time, as you can imagine.
That's Ben Garland.
I mean, that's exactly Ben Garland.
Any community events that are going on over the next five-plus weeks, if there's a Bronco player there, it's probably going to be Ben Garland.
But that's just him.
And he doesn't even have to stay in town because he's not injured. He's in good health. It's mm-hmm. Now, the guys like Shane Ray, who's completing his rehab from the toe injury, Brandon Marshall, Dane Trevathan, others, they've got to be here, and they're required to be here. So no vacation for those guys. In fact, Brandon Marshall expects that he'll start running next week, which is a significant step in his recovery from the midfoot injury that he had late last year. But most of the guys, I mean, we're sitting here recording this at midday on Thursday. I'll bet you some of them are already in the air en route to their destinations unknown.
I think DeMarcus told me he was going back home, you know, Auburn, Alabama, going to go see some family, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think I heard Chris Harris was going home.
It's his birthday, actually. Yeah, it's his birthday, and he's got a charity event in Tulsa, his hometown. I think it's next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend. I'm not sure. That's another thing, guys. A lot of guys that are civically minded, community minded, do stuff in their hometowns. Todd Davis, in a few weeks, has got a football camp back in California, for instance. A lot of guys have stuff like that going on over the next several weeks. So
that's the time to do it before you get bunkered down in the Ramada down the road and, you know, getting ready for training camp and, as they say, the grind. Or if you're RG3, as I read in a quote this week, this offseason, for other people, the grind, for him, the find, because it's where you find what you have.
Wow. Some wisdom there. That's deep, RG3, man. Did he major in philosophy at Baylor?
I think we can count that one out, but some good stuff there. Looking at good stuff from the Broncos, some players really showed that they've improved from past years or that they want to make a really big mark on this year. On Monday, we got to watch practice. Had that been going on? Like, I'd been putting photo galleries up in the time between mm-hmm. media. I hadn't been able to come out there and watch what was happening. But it was really cool to get back to actually watching a practice, being able to see who's really, like, making great plays out there and who might do something at training camp that'll catch some people's eyes mm-hmm. or maybe in preseason and later on the season.
Yeah, and even though it was a rough day in spots, particularly for the offense, early in practice, timing was off. They had some drop passes on all levels of the depth chart. Some guys who had good practices in OTAs and minicamp before maybe struggled. Like a good example was Dominique Jones, who had a couple of drop passes right out of the blocks. But then he recovered and he had some nice grabs later on. But it was an interesting day in terms of the lineup construction, because, you know, Jordan Norwood, you know, was hurting, Cody Latimer was hurting, Kyle Williams was hurting, so you had a Nathan Palmer seeing reps with the first team, and there was a move the ball 2-minute period at the end of the practice, and the matchup that was jumping out at me as I watched it was Nathan Palmer against Bradley Roby, and of course Roby ended up getting whistled for the pass interference call in the end zone that set up a C.J. Anderson touchdown run and goal to go right after that. So, you know, it was an opportunity for Nathan Palmer to get some reps with Peyton Manning, which he really hasn't had. And, you know, I think he took advantage a little bit, and we'll see if he can build off that when they get to a training camp. Of course, then again, it's going to depend on the health of guys, and if those other receivers are back, probably not as many reps for Palmer, but certainly he showed some flashes that maybe will give him a longer look when it gets to training camp. And that's really what guys out there were trying to do, whether it was injuries forcing them onto the first team, or those days when a lot of veterans got days off, and you had younger players and guys that were backups seeing extensive playing time, it's earning the chance for more reps when August rolls around and training camp gets underway.
It's kind of interesting to me with the wide receivers, because I kind of asked Emmanuel Sanders about this a few weeks ago. The transition in the offense and scheme and all that, it's always talked about how the quarterback, how the running game is going to adjust, how the offensive line is going to adjust, and there hasn't been a whole lot of focus on what the wide receivers had to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's just going to be terminology and getting like timing down with the quarterback, and these are guys who haven't done a whole lot of work with Peyton Manning. So I think that transition was probably going to be pretty tough when you're talking about guys working with the first team with Emmanuel Sanders as the top wide receiver and Cody Latimer still out.
Well, Gary Kubiak actually alluded to this one day when he met the media after practice about the difficult transition that wide receivers face getting into the league, and also when they learn a new scheme. Now, it's not like these guys are starting completely over, because as we know, this is a blended scheme of the concepts that Kubiak and Rick Dennison had in their previous stops and what the Broncos have done the last 3 years. And probably for the receivers, it's more of what they've been doing than the concepts that Kubiak and Dennison are bringing. And I think the burden of change in terms of this specific scheme, change or tweak, call it what you will, is more on the offensive line and the running game than the wide receivers. But certainly there's a transition involved with it. We've seen so many receivers in the league that have come in lately, they've been drafted, and they've come in right away and they've succeeded, that I think it's led people to believe that maybe the transition for a wide receiver isn't as great as it once was. But I think it still is, and certainly I think that's why, you know, Cody Latimer didn't see a lot of playing time last year, and why he still needs all the reps he can get. It was a little bit of a setback for him to have the hamstring injury and not be out there for that practice on Monday, and also late last week.
You kind of touched on this for a second, and I don't really have a whole lot to add to it, but you kind of mentioned how they'd be kind of fusing parts of the offense from last year and the recent years with the parts of the offense that Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison have kind of had for a while. And it made me think of, I can't remember who we were talking to, but it was a player who had been around them for a while. And they're talking about the offense and saying that it's always changing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like we talk about this as if Kubiak's offense and Dennison's offense is always kind of like a known commodity.
It's not a static thing.
It seems like it's always adding new things to it.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. There are some plays that you see, especially in the running game, that if you were out here a decade ago when Gary Kubiak was offensive coordinator and Rico was coaching the O-line, that you see him, it takes you back. Seeing some C.J. Anderson runs, seeing some Monte Ball runs, I had visions of, you know, Mike Anderson and Ruben Drones and Clinton Portis and other guys who were part of that chain of 1,000-yard running backs that seemed at one point destined to go on into the future in perpetuity, and of course didn't quite work out that way. The string got broken toward the end of the Shanahan years, after Gary Kubiak had left. Those remain the same, but you know, a lot of other concepts from the offense. It's not a classical Kubiak offense, as it were, and it is always evolving. And to me, that tells you what kind of tactician Gary Kubiak is. He understands that that a scheme needs to be a living, breathing entity, almost the one that is always in a state of evolution, because you're always you're adapting to everything from rules changes to to teams that scheme against you and figure out a way to stop one thing. Then you've got to have a counter move to that.
Owen Daniels kind of touched on the mix that they're going to have, play action passes, things like that, and he said that what Peyton does really well, and what he's done well in this in Adam Gase's offense previously, with the hurry up and the no huddle, it's a great change of pace.
Yeah.
Kind of like being able to throw a defense off its balance, something like that.
Yeah, I feel safe in saying that this offense is going to run hurry up more than any other Gary Kubiak offense has, and I also feel pretty safe in saying they're going to have more shotgun looks than any other Gary Kubiak offense has had. Again, it's part of the evolution, part of adapting to the talent that you have, and a guy like Peyton Manning. We hear so much about the defense and the way Wade Phillips has said, I would say pretty much, just seems like every time he meets the media, about how it's adapting his scheme to the talent he has and the players he has. I haven't really talked as much about that in the offense, but the same thing exists there. You're going to look at what you have and say, okay, what can this group do best? And then plan accordingly. And you don't go for a championship by taking away the things that guys like Peyton Manning do best. So I think we're going to see plenty of no huddle looks. And that's why a guy, say a James Casey, is going to be a very valuable component to this offense, because you can line him up inside tight end, you can line him up in a slot type alignment, you can line him up at fullback. Whether you want to have Peyton Manning under center and have him at a fullback, or do you want to do a shotgun, or even have some pistol looks with Peyton Manning and then Casey and the tailback lined up behind the quarterback. There's a lot you can do. You have the ability to change the look, change the formation, without changing personnel. And someone like him will help open up some horizons for the offense. And I think he's kind of going under the radar, but I think he's going to be very important to what this offense wants to do in being able to maintain a high tempo when it wants to hit that. But also giving the defense a lot to think about from snap to snap.
Now, looking at the defensive side, I kind of want to start off with something I noticed from watching practice on Monday, and that's that defensive linemen are getting their hands up a lot. And that's something we kind of know about Bill Kowar, the defensive line coach, is that he makes sure if guys can't get to the quarterback,
right,
that they get their hands up. And Kowar has been pretty heavily lauded by coaches so far. I mean, it seems like whenever you have a question about about someone on the line, it's like, well, Kowar's getting the best out of him. I mean, that's something we knew he would do.
He used to do that when he was a player. I mean, this is kind of revealing how much old football film I've watched, but he understood that if he couldn't get to the quarterback, that if you could kind of circle back a little bit and get your arms up, you could have an impact on the play.
Sometimes
it's not all about just pressure. It's getting your hands up and getting even a fingertip on the football. That's disruptive.
And if a quarterback thinks they have the room to step up, put your hand up, you're going to affect that, not think that's going to happen.
And if the DNs, if they're stunning and twisting inside and they're getting their hands up, and then you force the quarterback outside, you've got the corners that can come up and kind of contain him as well. If you've got receivers running short routes, if you've got the corners in man coverage, and let's say the receivers are going deep, the corners are in man, you have the chance for the safety to get involved as well. Imagine if a quarterback decides to get outside of the pocket because, say, Malik Jackson gets his hands up and threatens to disrupt the pass. Quarterback gets outside the pocket, and TJ Ward, can have missile lock on him, basically. That's a scary proposition for a quarterback. This is a defense with five Pro Bowlers coming back from last year. It's a defense with a lot of talent. I think starting, whether it's pressure up front or whether it's the defensive linemen, circling back and getting their hands up, I think this is going to open up a lot of new horizons for this defense, as far as making the kind of plays that really mess up an offense, quite frankly. Pressure, sacks, deflections. You know, this is how you discombobulate an offense. This is also how you force takeaways. You know, and
that was something the defense didn't really find until about the middle of the season. I think they started really catching those breaks on takeaways.
They did, but it not to the same degree that the defense did back in 2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you had Elvis Dumervil and Von Miller, you know, both working off the edge, and there was a lot of pressure generated, and it was forcing quite a few takeaways. I mean, I look back at the 2012 season, and a lot of the signature plays were, you know, fumble returns. You know, Chris Harris Jr. with the pick six against Baltimore in Week 15 that really turned the lights out on that game. That's where the defense wants to get back to in terms of takeaways, and then you do that, and you. You get the scoring defense down. You know, we might be sitting here talking about the Broncos going from a top three defense in yards per play, yards per game, to maybe, you know, maybe losing a little bit. Maybe they'll be seventh, eighth, ninth, something like that. But if they get their sack rate up, their pressure rate up, their takeaway rate up, then I think that's also going to end up reducing their points allowed from last year. And then I think this defense will truly complement the offense if it's able to make those kinds of explosive, disruptive plays.
Yeah. As competitions start heating up here, moving into training camp, we're going to start looking at those a little bit down the road. But I kind of want to see if anyone stood out to you at the safety spot. A lot of safety action we saw on Monday with TJ Ward out. I was wondering if maybe I saw a lot of David Bruton, some three safety packages.
With Omar Bolden involved, yes, because of, you know, with Ward not there. I mean, certainly you'd have to say that Of the guys beyond Ward and Darian Stewart, you'd probably say David Bruton's probably a little bit in the lead, but with his experience and you know, as a special teams captain, you have to think there's going to be a place on this roster for David Bruton with the leadership he provides on special teams and also on defense as well. And the other thing that Bruton showed last year is that he's very good at diagnosing screen passes as they develop and coming forward and attacking and blowing them up. It's where he can use his straight line speed, which he has quite a bit of. You know, but Bolden, I've been impressed with Omar Bolden because, you know, it's taken some time. He saw some safety work in 2013. I think he's getting better at the position. It wasn't something that appeared completely natural to him when he first stepped in there, and when he did see some action in 2013, it seemed like he was, you know, not in the spot he needed to be quite a bit. But he looked more assertive back there, and he was making fewer mistakes when he was at safety the last few weeks. That's a positive sign. You know, Darian Stewart's going to have some competition. I mean, I'd still say Stewart has the inside track, but. You know, Bruton and Bolden, you have more confidence in them to be able to provide that push. And also, if they're playing well, then I think we'll see some three safety alignments because, you know, again, Wade Phillips wants to get the best guys on the field. And if you go in and you get into the dime package, what if you want your six best defensive backs, maybe that sixth best DB happens to be Bruton, or maybe it happens to be Omar Bolden if he earns it instead of a cornerback. And in that case, you want to get those guys out in the field. And the other thing with Bruton and Bolden is they have so much speed that, you know, you can put them in as a third safety, but they can also be a corner if need be. Certainly, Bolden has been a cornerback, and Bruton has the speed to be able to handle that if they want to change the alignment without changing personnel. So there's a lot of options there.
There's going to be a lot of storylines. I mean, competition alone is going to be a big focus, especially on the offensive line.
We're talking about other positions. Offensive line is going to be the story of camp, I think.
What they are going to line up with is what Coach Kubiak has said.
At the start of camp, though.
At the start of camp. Mm-hmm. But that could obviously change. One thing I want to ask you about is, because I didn't make it out to this, taste of the Broncos. You went, right?
I did.
How was it?
Lovely.
Did you eat?
I did sample quite a bit of it and quite a few of the restaurants, you know. And I got some good ideas for places that I'd like to go at some point. I mean, you know, the restaurant scene in this town just seems to be getting better and better with every year. And you know, you had some high end stuff there. I had some food that I'd never heard of.
I heard,
and it was
someone
terrific.
Had like squid ink.
Squid ink pasta.
How was that?
That was good. That was very good. I liked everything I had. I liked everything I had. I had squid ink pasta before, but I mean, there was, you know, some different type of pork. There were some, you know, a red pepper bisque, actually, was something that was out there. In fact, Lameen Barrow was working that stand, and he was really, you know, he was really getting into it. I mean, some of the guys kind of stood back and kind of helped out, but Lameen was really kind of actually pouring everything into every little cup, and then after that, the chef was showing him how to provide the proper garnish. He was getting
it's
into
all about
Dominique Jones, I think, was working the Osaka Ramen Station, and was explaining to people, you know, what kind of garnish he was putting on top of the little bowls of soup, and you know, and was doing it himself and all that. It's really cool to see the guys get into that like that. You know,
I wonder who's like the most culinary player. Who's the most culinary gifted?
That's a good question.
Maybe Broncos player ever.
Wow. Well, as far as actually being in the kitchen, I'm not sure. That would be something to consider. I think maybe we, you know, talk to Billy Thompson, you know, who of course was on the team back in from 69 to 81 and still works for the organization. You know, I wonder like when they all got together for a meal, if they went to a player's house, where did they go and who was cooking? Like
one of my favorite things.
I know the guys on those teams used to go to a couple of long past or restaurants on Friday nights to do some like playbook review. The old Zhang Brewing Company, which was over by where the aquarium is now. They used to gather there. They used to gather there and kind of do a playbook review session. But I wonder when they went to a house, like whose house they go to, and did that guy cook or they just pick up? Like we know about last year how the D-line would get together at one of their houses. But they
Thanksgiving
go get buffalo,
is always a thing, too.
But they would go get Buffalo Wild Wings.
B-dubs.
Yeah. I saw Knighton in there once. Terrence Knighton, now with Washington, like just walks in, just got his order of food for everybody and left, you know?
I saw a Instagram video last year, Vince Wilfork, and I think his wife took a video of him, and he has a smoker or something.
Mm. Yes.
And so he was like cooking something in there, and he's like dancing while he's like checking on it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I mean, I can't really do any justice, but there was some rump shaking.
I don't doubt that. You know, hey. Hey, maybe he was smoking a rump roast.
There you go.
And he's
shaking
his rump, you know, just to carry the theme. But yeah, that's a really good question. What was interesting, I asked a couple of players and about, you know, if they were getting some ideas. And, like, you know, Virgil Green said he's looking for a good Mexican restaurant, but he hadn't really found one that was like the ones he knew in California.
Naturally.
The thing about it, a lot of the players, you know, let's face it, they live down in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So
closer to the facility.
Right. You're near the facility. And there are some good restaurants in the suburbs, but certainly the culinary variety increases exponentially once you get into the city. And, you know, in the course of if they live in town during the season and then they go back home or somewhere in the off season, you know, you get into a routine. You don't get into the city that much. And I think, you know, something like Taste the Broncos, I think, probably opened some guys' eyes to some of the restaurants that are around here if it's not kind of in their normal routine. And I think we're all guilty of that. And, you know, we all kind of default to the stuff that we know, the stuff in our neighborhood, that sort of thing. I remember, one time my wife and I were up in Highland, and we're like, we need to come back here more often.
Yeah.
The problem is, I mean, we live in Wash Park, and there's restaurants there, and we kind of default to those because it's convenient. But, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in this town now. It's really coming on. The restaurant scene's really come a long way just in the time that I've lived here.
Now, shifting to our pop culture segment, this is kind of inappropriate or nothing, but favorite Simpsons football moment?
Ooh. Well, you know, the Simpsons hasn't been kind to the Denver Broncos over the years.
No, it has not. The
you know, the Hank Scorpio episode where Homer, you know, his dream was to own the Dallas Cowboys. Hank gets from Denver Broncos, and they show the Broncos stumbling around the front yard, dropping passes. I think a ball flies off someone's helmet, and then in an episode 5 years, nearly 5 years earlier, when Lisa has a gift for gambling on football. But before Homer taps into Lisa's preternatural ability to predict football games, he's picking them himself. And I can probably recite this scene pretty close to memory. They have the Jimmy the Greek parody up there. First game today, Denver-New England is too close to call. But if you're one of those compulsive types who has to bet, I don't know, Denver. And he goes and bets on Denver. And by the third quarter, they're down 55-10. But at the same time, in a fifth season episode, the one where Sideshow Bob, it's kind of the parody of Cape Fear, and Sideshow Bob chases them down to Terror Lake. When he's meeting with the FBI and the witness and talking about being in the witness relocation program, he said, and they tell him, "Oh, we're going to give you new identities." And Homer says, "Ooh, I want to be John Elway." But then it becomes a joke against the Broncos because Homer, in his 1930s uniform with a leather helmet, you know, a number 7 jersey, goes over the pile, and the announcer says, "Thanks to Elway's patented last-second magic, the final score of Super Bowl 30, Denver 7, San Francisco 56." So, yeah, not very nice to the Broncos. But at the same time, in that universe, if Homer Simpson was the owner of the Broncos, then in the Simpsons universe, he would have supervised the most successful run in team history. Because
when did that episode come out?
The Hank Scorpio episode was in 1996.
Oh,
they were going 13-3. The next year, then they won back to back Super Bowls. After that, it's about the best 3-year run that anybody's ever had. So maybe there was something to that. And what other Simpsons football references are there? I know there was one where Homer Simpson has a Carolina Panthers credit card.
Yes, that was a more recent one.
That was a recent one.
I like this one. This is a screen grab.
Oh, that's from the gambling episode. The big shoe, because he goes from one channel. Like Jimmy the Greek says, "Yes,
lock of the week.
And Homer's like, "That's a big lock, but I don't trust that guy." And then they click to the other channel, and I'm going to make Cincinnati my shoe-in of the week. And it's a shoe that's basically the size of a small table.
The bigger the prop, the more likely they are to being right.
Yes, exactly. It's size matters, right?
Yeah. Well, if it's something's a little lock of the week, then you're kind of not sure.
Yes.
But if it's your big shoe in, then, I mean,
exactly.
Bet all your money on it.
And then there were. Oh, this is one. When Homer secedes and starts his own town, and he says, "Okay, now all I have to do is wait for a sports franchise to come calling." He says, "Hello, I represent the Arizona Cardinals." And Homer says, "Keep right on going." And when Homer thinks he sees God, he's like, "You know, there are some..." God says, the God on The Simpsons says, "You know, there are some Sundays where I'd rather watch football. Does St. Louis still have a team?" And this is before the Rams. But no, they moved to Phoenix. Oh, yeah. Admittedly, even though it's not good for the Broncos, the funniest is probably when he comes home and sees the Denver Broncos in his front yard. And that's the episode where he buys Tom Landry's hat from the sports memorabilia store to try and inspire the people that work for him. Tom Landry's hat doesn't work. What will?
Do you ever watch Hank the Hill? I love their football stuff too.
Yes.
Or King of the Hill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bad...
Well, yeah, Bobby wanted to move to Wichita Falls because the Cowboys moved their training camp there.
They were trying to lure it. They were trying to lure the training camp, and so they made this terrible video.
Yeah.
It's like, come to Arlen.
Well, I mean, they do have... It's it's Tom Landry Middle School that he goes to, right?
Yeah.
Which, the thing about
We forgot one football Simpsons thing. Man gets hit by football in the groin.
Oh, the Hans Molman production. The ball, the groin, it works on so many levels.
There was also one where
there's a
like
pro football. Remember, there's like the Springfield Adams and the Shelbyville. Mm-hmm. I think the Sharks and
their annual rivalry,
right? And Homer and Ned go to the game together, and Homer buys the knock show hat. Knock show man. I want to be a knock show man.
There was also one, I think they were watching a rented video. It's called Football's Greatest Injuries.
Oh, God. You made me miss Joe Theismann. That's an awful show.
Yeah.
On The Simpsons, it's clear from the course of the episodes that that there were always writers on the staff who were sports fans.
Yes.
The references they dropped in. I mean,
well,
the softball episode. But when you had Ken Griffey Jr. and Wade Boggs and Ozzie Smith, that episode
legendary.
That's legendary. That may be the best episode of all time. And actually, it was, I believe, I forget what website it was on, but
Deadspin
mentioned that that was Eric a key Malikowski. Moment because. That was because The Simpsons aired on a Thursday night, but that was the night that it beat not only The Cosby Show, but the Winter Olympics and the ratings.
Yeah, Cosby Show huge at that time,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, and that was a milestone for it, but man, yeah, it's. I feel like I'm missing it.
There are so many. I mean, there was an episode where Bart played on a team and Homer tried to coach them, and Homer was a terrible coach.
King of the Hill crossover because... The Pee Wee team is playing a team from Arlen. I think Hank says, drove 1,000 miles for this.
I'd have to go back.
Oh, man.
I'm surfing Google right now just on the images, and there's all these, the shirts that are like bootleg Bart Simpson shirts, and they're all terrible, and they're all kind of like... Everyone co-ops like the Bart Simpson. It's like don't have it like a cow or, you know, they do this for like everything, you know, political things. And Matt Groening, the creator, said he kind of loves those.
Yeah.
Just, you know, they're always something like completely out of left field, make no sense and have no connection at all. And they're just kind of like weird, like subcultures trying to like, maybe subvert mainstream culture or something like that. And it's always kind of funny to see that.
Was it Peyton Manning on an episode once?
He was.
Relatively recent.
I think Eli was on the same one. I think. I'm not going to lie. I haven't watched any episodes.
I mean, let's face
like
it.
Season something like 14, 15.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of dips in quality. And, you know, I'll actually, if I hear that there's an episode that's really good now, I'll watch it. You know, if it gets well reviewed, but most of my intense Simpsons knowledge is like is through the 15th, through the 15th season. There's one I neglected to mention this. Do you remember the episode where Bart gets a bigger brother because Homer is neglected, forgets to
Homer
pick him up?
Yeah.
Homer, as Bart's sitting in the rain. Homer's watching an NFL Films tribute to Bart Starr, and they're showing like, and there's people in the stands with a sign: "We'll never forget you, Bart." and the dog barks and sounds like the saying Bart, and then Maggie belches, and when she belches, it comes out Bart. I can't think of all this noise.
All three of the Manning brothers on an episode in 2009. Peyton, Eli, and Cooper.
Oh, and this is not an NFL one, but it's football. There's an episode, I think it was in like 02, where he's excited about the new XFL season and hasn't been told that the league folded. And he's got, you know how sometimes Homer holds up like a little pennant?
Yes.
Like, he like
sports
when, mid like sports
televised mid-season
sports. mid-season, and he's actually, I think he's got a pennant that says XFL on it.
Someone in there definitely has a keen eye for sports.
Yes.
Well.
Oh man, that's fun.
We'll probably have more of these kind of culture-related segments on the podcast coming in coming weeks, as we're about 4 or 5 something weeks away from training camp.
Yeah, we've got time to kill.
Yeah, so maybe we'll just watch Simpsons and report back.
Well, we can now. I actually have the app on my on my iPad through FX that's every Simpsons ever. So I'm going to maybe refresh myself. I'll go watch the Manning Brothers episode, which is a
Oh
brother, where art thou? I've never seen it. It was a 21st season episode. December 13th, 2009, and that's when the guest voices also include the Smothers Brothers.
Oh, Smothers Brothers.
Apparently
hour.
Bart is upset that he doesn't have
I haven't heard them in a while.
Apparently Bart is upset that he doesn't have a brother. Is part of the premise of it.
Well, we'll have to go back and watch that one. I think this will wrap it up. We'll start unraveling. Well, I guess we'll start unraveling as we wait for training camp, but also rolling out our training camp previews, position breakdowns. All that stuff.
Our usual stuff. We'll be counting down throughout July to the start of training camp. We actually our video countdowns, our 10 things to watch at training camp, will start on Tuesday the 23rd. When it'll be some of them June 23rd. Some of them will involve Chris Hall and Phil Milani. We'll also have a couple of other guests coming in to shoot those as well. And start the countdown. And of course,
some point the training camp schedule is going to come out. We'll have that on the website. You can start planning your summer around it, as I'm sure.
Start planning, because it's all open again for you to come out and join us. And the capacity at Dove Valley has never been higher because of the new the hillside that got constructed over on the west side of the facility. You know, I believe the capacity is considered to be about 5,000. So, you know, go ahead and make your plans. There's gonna be room for you. Bring your blankets. You know, bring your pens. You'll get some autographs. Watch the Broncos have some fun, and really, it'll be a training camp experience unlike any that's ever been at Dove Valley before. So,
we'll be out there with all our different types of media outs. We'll have people on the berm getting some fan insight for maybe our Facebook. We'll have cameras out there, getting some galleries out with the people enjoying it.
Yep.
This is as much, this is all for y'all. This is just tons of fun. And growing up in Charlotte, I never had that experience because you'd have to go down to Sparkle.
You never went down to Sparkle City for a practice, huh?
I couldn't do it. It was just too far away.
It's also too hot.
My car
Those fields at Wofford College where the Panthers practice, my goodness, they bake.
Yeah.
I remember there was actually one when I was working for the Panthers. It was so hot that the sunscreen was running down, like from the waterproof sunscreen was running down into my eyes and I couldn't see and I had to get a towel from the trainer to wipe my eyes out and some water to kind of flush it out. It was crazy.
True to its word, waterproof. It just streamed down.
Yeah, it was a little more pleasant here. I used to go when I was in Tampa. I used to go watch the Bucks practice when I was growing up there. At the time, they were at the University of Tampa. And even though it was hot, it was the perfect setup because it was in this small college stadium that seated about 4,000 people, but the entire grandstands were undercover, so you could watch practice and sit in the shade.
Oh. Perfect.
When I was in high school and college, I used to do that all the time. It was marvelous.
Well, we can't wait for everyone to come out.
Mm-hmm.
We will see you out there at some point. We'll have that release whenever it comes up.
It usually comes at some point. If past years are any guide, it will be at some point between now and probably the end of June. the recent exception to that was 2011, the lockout year when, you know, because the lockout was protracted, it was really just, you know, kind of getting that plan together pretty fast. So, you know, check back on DenverBroncos.com. We'll be able to tell you when and where to come and let you know what's going on. And we hope to see all of you out there. And certainly if I speak for Swanee as well, if you see us within earshot, just say hello.
Yeah.
Love to see you and talk to you.
And don't forget, we're also on iTunes. I want to thank everyone for listening. We'll be back with you next week.